It is Thursday, March 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, two federal courts halt U.S. President Donald Trump's revised travel ban. Dutch voters reject a populist government. And a long-missing famous violin is found and is now ready for public performances. It's all ahead. In the United States, two federal courts have issued temporary restraining orders against President Donald Trump's second attempt to use an executive order to limit who's allowed to enter the country. A judge in Hawaii blocked both the order's suspension of refugee admissions and its ban on issuing new visas to people from a group of six countries. A federal judge in Maryland, meanwhile, also cited Trump's comments in issuing a separate injunction Thursday, but that ruling applies only to the visa ban portion of the executive order and not the section on the refugee program. The Trump administration says the ban is necessary to protect the country from the threat of terrorism. It features a four-month ban on admitting any refugees and a three-month freeze on issuing visas to people from Iran, Syria, Yemen, Libya, Somalia, and Sudan. It was due to go into effect Thursday before its enforcement was frozen. Nicholas Espiritu is a staff attorney with the National Immigration Law Center. He tells me his organization was among those that filed against the revised travel ban.
We did. We filed a lawsuit in the District Court of Maryland representing several refugee assistance organizations as well as several individuals who were directly impacted by the travel ban.
I'm sure your organization is very pleased by this decision by the two federal courts.
Absolutely. We're very happy that in Hawaii, both the travel restrictions on the six designated countries as well as the refugee provisions have been temporarily enjoined. And likewise, in our Maryland case, the judge issued a very strong ruling blocking at least the portions affecting the six designated countries.
Why is your organization so opposed to this travel ban?
First and foremost, this travel ban has real effects on real people's lives. There are families that are separated, that with family members left in dangerous conditions facing prosecution, persecution, and potentially even death. But also, importantly, this travel ban sends a negative message throughout the country that one religion, Islam, is to be viewed negatively and to be and it sends a message that individuals from that religion are not welcome here. And we think that that is antithetical to core American values.
Now, the Trump administration and Mr. Trump himself have said that the ban is necessary because of the threat of terrorism, the fact that a number of terrorists have been Muslims. What is your reaction to that argument?
Well, Mr. Trump might have said that, but the agencies he tasked with investigating whether or not there was actually justification for this travel ban found the opposite. They found that there is no correlation between individuals coming into this country from those six designated countries and incidences of terrorism. And so we believe that this alleged harm, in fact, isn't true, which really underscores the fact of what is the true motivation, which is President Trump's repeated statements expressing anti-Muslim animus.
That's Nicholas Espiritu, staff attorney with the National Immigration Law Center. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Andrew, I know there's a lot going on.
There is a lot with the Trump administration in particular. Early this morning, the Trump administration released their budget proposal for fiscal year 2018, and that's causing a lot of buzz in social media with people looking at the different programs that they proposed to cut, including the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Corporation for National Community Service, other entities. And it's causing a lot of consternation and strong feelings among people on social media saying, you know, Corporation for Public Broadcasting produces Sesame Street, the popular children's show here in the U.S., which I think is now around the world. They have all different versions of that. So people pointing out these specific elements of these programs that are going to be cut under this proposal. But the counterpoints to these claims are that the budget is just a proposal, so it does still have to go through the House and Senate. And the cuts may just move the money to the states and have the states fund them. So one thing that was trending on social media, that there were cuts to Meals on Wheels, which is a program that provides food to people who can't leave their homes. People are saying, well, it doesn't really cut that program. It just reassigns where the money comes from. It's going to come from the states, not the federal government. So a lot of back and forth about that budget proposal. And in the story we just heard about the travel ban, the immigration ban, people talking about the federal judge in Hawaii who put a block on that ban. And so they're using hashtag boycott Hawaii. They're saying they want to boycott the state. They're not going to travel there because of this judge's ruling. They're saying that refugees should be put in Hawaii. If they want to let them in, then they can go live in Hawaii. And others, however, are saying, good, let the Trump supporters boycott Hawaii. We don't want them to come to our state. We want to have our state be, you know, nice with the palm trees and pineapple and all that. And one point that many people made, a lot of the people who are saying boycott Hawaii probably weren't going to go to Hawaii anyway. So it's a little bit of a bite that lacks some teeth.
Well, and the other judge is from Maryland. So, you know.
Yeah, we're not hearing a lot about boycott Maryland. It's not as fun, I guess, as Hawaii.
Maybe not parts of Baltimore. You never know.
You never know. That's what will come up next.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump's first federal budget is designed to put America first. Haiti's Senate approves a prime minister designate. President Trump says he will produce evidence that former President Barack Obama wiretapped him, and an Australian aid worker is released in Afghanistan. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Do you think you look like your name? A new study provides evidence that people have a good chance of being able to match people's names with their photographs. Researchers who conducted the study think the reason could be due to people who subconsciously change their appearance in order to follow cultural norms and cues that are linked to their names. The study's lead author, Yonat Zwebner from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, says previous research has indicated that cultural stereotypes are attached to names, including how a person with a certain name should look. Zwebner says that, for example, when people hear the name Bob, they tend to imagine someone with a rounder face than someone named Tim. According to the researchers, it's believed that over time, these types of stereotypes can affect people's facial appearance. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at new research concerning efforts to combat diabetes. Dutch voters Wednesday turned out by the millions and decided to maintain the status quo, giving the ruling center-right party, VVD party, of Prime Minister Mark Rutte, the most seats in parliament, although down from the number it held after the last election in 2012. The anti-European Union Party for Freedom, PVV, of Geert Wilders, was in a three-way tie for second with the Christian Democrat and Democrat parties. Voter turnout exceeded 80%, reflecting the most voter interest in 30 years. The ballot came amid tensions with Turkey over the decision to bar Turkish officials from campaigning on Dutch soil for a Turkish constitutional referendum to give President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping new powers. Associate professor in comparative politics Andre Crowell of the Free University in Amsterdam tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the outcome suggested the ruling party will have a tough time coming up with the right coalition that does not include Wilders' party.
Clearly, the Dutch parliament now is very fragmented. And the thing is that the right-wing parties do not have a majority. But now, because of the gains of Mr. Wilders, anti-immigration party, PVV, basically he has siphoned off this natural majority of the right, which means that now the right-wing parties, which is the Liberal VVD and the Conservative Christian Democrats, have to try and find two or maybe even three coalition partners to get the parliamentary majority. So that is quite a complex situation. They're basically forced now to govern with the opposite side. Usually, you know, you can easily form a three-party coalition. Now you'll need at least four and maybe five parties, so that is a complicated situation.
Turnout was extraordinary, the highest in some 30 years. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells you that this election is seen as very important by many Dutch citizens. Last time, indeed, turnout was just a little bit below 75%, so that increase in turnout, we have to see who actually benefited from that turnout. Clearly, it shows the importance of this election. It was, I think, a very exciting race because for a long time, it looked like Geert Wilders would be the largest party. And I think that mobilized a lot of people. It's clearly that the Dutch have rejected his political project. His most important opponents, namely D66, the Libertarian Party, and Green Left, have both gained most seats. It shows also the polarization of the Netherlands.
What impact, if any, did the dispute with Turkey have on this election?
Oh, a lot. Our Prime Minister, Rutte, from the VVD Liberal Party, has campaigned basically on being as close to Geert Wilders as he can. So saying, I'm also anti-immigrant, I'm also going to stop Islamization of our country. Your dream come true in an election, of course, that a minister of a Muslim-majority country, a female minister with a headscarf, enters your country, and she was unwanted at that moment, trying to campaign for a referendum in Turkey, and the prime minister was able to throw her out. It showed that our prime minister actually does something. You know, for those voters who were leaning towards Wilders, maybe this gave him clearly the lead. So you could argue that Mr. Erdogan, the president of Turkey, handed the electoral victory to Rutte, who then took the lead even more than he already did. And it was impossible for Wilders, of course, to do anything that would be as good.
André Coyle said the vast majority of voters rejected the anti-European effort and will not follow Britain out of the EU. He also said Wednesday's result shows that populist politicians can be beaten. France holds a first round of its presidential election next month. Scientists have reversed type 2 diabetes in a brief study of patients who underwent intensive medical treatment to control their blood sugar levels. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
By following a regimen of strict diet, exercise, and three diabetic medications, up to 40% of the participants managed to stay in remission or partial remission for 3 months after stopping their medication. The pilot research was conducted by investigators at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada. Senior researcher Dr. Herzl Gerstein stresses the findings are preliminary.
What this pilot study shows is that we're serious about this. We really think this is an important area to look into. It's not been well studied in a systematic way before, and we're hoping to make a lot of headway in this. And this pilot study suggests that there's enough smoke here to look for the fire.
Researchers divided 83 individuals with type 2 diabetes into three groups. Two of the groups received intensive metabolic intervention that included a personalized meal plan that cut their daily caloric intake by 500 to 750 calories per day. They were also provided with an individualized exercise plan, met with a dietitian regularly, and took medication at bedtime to help control blood glucose. The medications were insulin, a hormone produced by the pancreas, metformin, and acarbose. One group was intensively treated for 4 months, while the other group received the same intervention for 2 months. They were compared to the third group that was given standard diabetic management information from a healthcare provider, including lifestyle advice. All of the participants had their blood glucose measured at 20, 28, and 52 weeks to see how well their blood sugar was controlled. In the 8-week intensive therapy group, 6 out of 28 individuals were in remission 3 months after the intervention was completed. That compared to just 4 out of 28 individuals in the control group. In the 16-week group, 40% of the participants, 11 of 27, met the criteria for complete or partial remission of their diabetes for a period of 3 months after the trial. Remission was defined as normal blood sugar levels, partial remission as near normal blood glucose. The results of the study were published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. In type 2 diabetes, the body either does not make enough of the hormone insulin to ferry nutrients into cells, or the cells become resistant to insulin. The question, according to Gerstein, is whether driving blood sugar levels down to a normal range through strict medical intervention effectively puts diabetes into remission and keeps it there.
Does that normality of the sugar for a while allow the pancreas, which makes insulin and which controls the blood sugars, to recover some of its function? And there is a lot of clues in the literature suggesting that may be possible, that by removing the toxic effect of high sugar in the blood, you can restore some of the pancreas' ability to keep the sugars normal without drugs. And that's really the underlying basis for this whole approach.
Gerstein says the idea of putting type 2 diabetics into remission could motivate patients to make significant lifestyle changes. The team is conducting 3 more trials now to see whether the use of different drugs achieves a better result. Diabetes is a growing epidemic worldwide, and patients struggle to maintain blood sugar levels in the normal range to avoid severe complications like heart disease, blindness, and kidney failure. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. A prized violin that was stolen and missing for 35 years recently returned to the concert stage for the first time since being recovered in 2015. The exquisite Stradivarius, made in the 18th century, belonged to virtuoso violinist Roman Totenberg. He died before the instrument was rediscovered, and it now belongs to his daughters. One of Totenberg's former students played the violin this week in its first public concert, a performance one of the Totenberg daughters said reminded her of her father playing. VOA's Deborah Block has more.
Prestigious Chinese violinist Mira Wang got familiar with the famous violin before the private performance in New York.
I think Roman was one of the most important men I have met as a teacher, and also he was almost like a mentor to me. And I came from China, I didn't know anybody, and he took me really in as a student and into his family.
Totenberg's 3 daughters all agreed that Wang should play the concert.
We call Mira fourth sister. She was my father's protege. He certainly had many beloved students, but she was so close and to all of us, to him, and this is just the most wonderful extension of his playing.
Totenberg played the Stradivarius for almost 4 decades. The instrument was made in 1734 by Italian master Antonio Stradivari. During his long and distinguished career, Totenberg performed on the world's greatest concert stages. He died in 2012 at the age of 101. The story behind the missing violin sounds something out of a mystery novel. The Stradivarius was taken from Totenberg's dressing room after a concert.
He was greeting well-wishers afterwards. When he turned around to go back and get the violin, it was gone. And they found the case thrown down the stairs in the place where the concert had been. And they called the police and the FBI came.
The violin was missing for 35 years, until the former wife of the man who stole it, one of Totenberg's former students, it turns out, tried to sell it to a violin specialist who identified it. In 2015, the instrument was returned to the violinist's three daughters, who have restored it to playing condition. For Wang, it is an honor to be the first to play Totenberg's beloved violin again.
It means a great deal to me that I can use the violin to be the first one who would bring it to the public. There's joy, there's a lot of sorrow for that he could never see this or hear this, and I wish he was with us.
The Totenberg sisters plan to sell the violin to a performer or foundation, so it will once again thrill audiences around the world. In 2011, a Stradivarius sold for more than $15 million. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
And one of those Totenberg daughters is Nina Totenberg, and she's a longtime correspondent with National Public Radio. Well, that is our program for today. Please remember to look at our website at voanews.com. There's a range of stories you might be interested in. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump has signed a revised executive order on immigration, protecting the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called it a vital measure for strengthening American national security. This executive order places a 90-day ban on the issuance of new visas for citizens of six nations. They include Libya, Iran, Somalia, Syria, Sudan, and Yemen. Three of these, Iran, Sudan, and Syria, are state sponsors of terrorism, said U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The other three have served as safe havens for terrorists, countries where the government has lost control of territory to terrorist groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. This increases the risk, said Attorney General Sessions, that people admitted here from these countries may belong to terrorist groups or may have been radicalized by them. In addition, the United States refugee program will be suspended for 120 days, and the United States will not accept more than 50,000 refugees in this fiscal year. The revised order explicitly exempts legal permanent residents and those who already have a valid visa to come to the U.S., among others. The revised executive order takes effect March 16th. Speaking to America's allies and partners around the world, Secretary Tillerson stated that this order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends. The State Department will cooperate with other federal agencies and implement these temporary restrictions in an orderly manner. The State Department will implement the provisions in this executive order that allow for the admissions of refugees when it is determined they do not pose a risk to the security or welfare of the United States, said Secretary Tillerson. We cannot compromise our nation's security by allowing visitors entry when their own governments are unable or unwilling to provide the information we need to vet them responsibly, said Attorney General Sessions. This executive order provides a needed pause so we can carefully review how we scrutinize people coming here from these countries of concern.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.